Chronicles chapter 28. So I've been asked 100 times this last week, how'd you respond? We're having twins, if you've not heard. I've not told anybody this last week. And the only response I have is, I now understand why Sarah laughed. I fully understand why Sarah laughed. We are thrilled to pieces. Thank y'all so much for all of the encouragement, the support, just the excitement that we're able to share with our church family. It just means so much. Jessica's doing about the same. I think her suffering is now double worth it. Don't tell her that. But hopefully it'll be better in a month or two. But again, we're just thrilled to pieces. I appreciate all the love we've been shown and just the excitement that we've shared with y'all. What I'd like to do this morning is actually not talk about birth at all, but actually talk about the exact opposite of that and talk about David's last words. About 2 to 3 weeks ago, we experienced 3 funerals within 1 week. And Andy had told me that's pretty common at Manslick. And I've always heard deaths come in three, and there have been a couple of times now since I've been here that deaths have come in three. And I will admit, I'm 28 years old. I don't think about death a lot. I think about life. I think about my family. I think about October 14th a lot. There's a lot of things I think about, but death is definitely not one of them. What I'd like to do this morning is try to present a few words of encouragement and admonition from the life of David about his final time before death. So the question I'd like to ask this morning is, what lessons do David's last words teach us? I've talked a lot about David this last year. After the Blitz study, I fell in love with David, and I have just learned so much from him. And what I'd like to do this morning is go into the final words of David and try to draw 4 different lessons that he teaches us and try to live those out a bit more fully. So let's begin with lesson number 1. Let's read together. 1 Chronicles chapter 28, beginning in verse 1. 1 Chronicles 28, beginning in verse 1. David assembled at Jerusalem all the officials of Israel, the officials of the tribes, the officers of their divisions that served the king, the commanders of thousands, the commanders of hundreds, the stewards of the property and livestock of the officials and his sons, together with the palace officials, the mighty men, and all the seasoned warriors. Then King David rose to his feet and said, "Hear me, my brothers and my people." Stop here. Again, just notice what verse 1 tells us. David's called everybody he can. He has called everybody he can together, and he's making final proclamation. Continuing verse 2. Then David rose to his feet and said, "Hear me, my brothers, my people. I had it in my heart to build a house of rest for the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and for the footstool of our God, and I made preparations for building. But God said to me, 'You may not build a house for my name, for you are a man of war and have shed blood. Yet the Lord God of Israel chose me from all my father's house to be king over Israel forever. For he chose Judah as leader, and in the house of Judah, my father's house, and among my father's sons, he took a pleasure in me to make me king over all Israel. And of all my sons, for the Lord has given me many sons, he has chosen Solomon, my son, to visit on the throne of his kingdom and of the Lord over all Israel. He said to me, 'It is Solomon your son who shall build my house and my courts, for I have chosen him to be my son, and I will be his father. I will establish his kingdom forever if he continues strong in keeping my commandments and my rules as he is today. Now therefore, in the sight of all Israel, the assembly of the Lord, and in the hearing of our God, observe and seek out all the commandments of the Lord your God, that you may possess this good land and leave it as an inheritance to your children after you.'" It's interesting, is it not, that as David begins his final benediction to Israel, he begins not by recounting all of the things that he and his people have done, but he focuses on the one thing that he didn't do. Now, if you don't know much about David, he was a military man of the might that Israel had never seen. He established a united kingdom. He brought the reign of Israel to its greatest geopolitical and military might in its history. He accumulated the wealth of Israel. He was a faithful man. He followed God's law. He brought about a restoration of God's people. David was a man after God's own heart. We could go on for hours about all the things that David did. 1 and 2 Samuel are full of it. But David begins not by recounting all the things he did, but by the one thing he could not do, and that's build the temple. And therefore he admonishes Solomon and the rest of the assembly, build the temple. So brethren, the first lesson I think David teaches us is this. You cannot do it all. You cannot do it all. I think most of us have, whether it's on paper or in our minds, a bucket list. What's on your bucket list? Jessica and I have a bucket list that's about 12 pages long. We would like to visit every country in the world 5 times. We'd love to visit every state 4 times. We'd love to have a house full of kids. I'd love to go back and get another degree. Jessica would love for us to be able to do more and more with camp. There's so many different activities we'd love to do. I've actually, for my life, really wanted to learn archery. Weird, right? I would love to learn archery. And then maybe someday I can take, you know, an actual cooking class and enjoy that a bit more. And then maybe Jessica can learn to sew more and do some classes there. Yeah, that's page one. All of us have a bucket list, right? I learned after having a child, you can take about 9/10 of that list and tear it to pieces because you're never going to get to it. Brethren, you can't do it all. I'm here to be the bearer of bad news, but you cannot do it all. This life is not given without end, nor are our breaths without measure. There's a limit to our days, a limit to our breaths, and a limit to the amount of exertion we're able to give. You can't do it all. Brother, what's on your bucket list? I would urge you to sit down if you've not and really ask yourself, what do you really want to do in this life? What do you really want to do in this life? David did so much, but he focused on the one thing that he was not able to do. Much like David, you cannot do it all. So put priority to what you can do. And is this not the message of the entire book of Ecclesiastes? If you will, look with me at the end of Ecclesiastes chapter 12. This is written by David's son Solomon. And Solomon, as he is an old man, reflecting on his life, tells his son much what David told the assembly. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 12, beginning in verse 12. My son, be aware of anything beyond these. Of making of many books there is no end, and of much study is a weariness of the flesh. What is he saying? There's no end to that which can be done. Now, this was before the printing press. I don't think David had, and Solomon would have any clue to what we have today. But if you're a reader like me, do you have a reading list? I actually have a spreadsheet, Matt, where I keep all the books that I want to read in order by category. You want to guess how many times that list has gotten shorter? Never. When you finish a good book, naturally, what do you want to do? You want to read everything else by that author, and then you want to read all the influences on that author, and then you go to the references section and read all the major references, and then you go online and try to figure out what other books did this reference and hopefully read that. For those of us that love books, there's no end. For you, it may not be books. It may be sports. I had a friend that was not a sports fan at all. He joked that he never really got into watching football because he couldn't begin it from the beginning. But, possibly you'll get it in a minute. But, there's no end. Brethren, there's no end to what human life can bring. And Solomon does not tell his son, therefore just give up, sit on the couch and do nothing with the rest of your life. What does he tell his son to do? Verse 13. The end of the matter all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Brethren, you can't do it all. Give priority to the things that you can do. Lesson number one. We'll go back to 1 Chronicles 28. Let's see what his second lesson that he gives his son is. 1 Chronicles 28. To many of you, this verse should be very familiar because you memorized it last year. Verse 9, and you, Solomon, my son, know the God of your father and serve him with a whole heart and a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and understands every plan and thought. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will cast you off forever. Be careful now, for the Lord has chosen you to build a house for the sanctuary. Be strong and do it. Do you notice the shift in this verse? If you back up to verse 1 into verse 2, David has called all the assembly of Jerusalem to together. And the instructions that he gave in verse 1 down through verse 8 are given to the entire assembly. But as you switch to verse 9, David is now talking to his heir. He's talking to his son Solomon. And what does he tell Solomon? He says, as for you, Solomon, my son, know the God of your father. What is the first final word that David gives? Put God first. Put God first. Did any of you all read the book a few years ago, The Last Lecture? When that first came out, it was huge. There was a professor who had found out that he had cancer and his life was limited. He was dying in his 50s at a young age. And he gave a last lecture, giving all of his life words together. Many good principles in there. But brethren, the message that he gives in that book is different from what David gave Solomon. And for all of us who believe in and fear God and love him, the greatest instruction, and may I say this is perhaps the greatest of the four that I'll provide this morning, know the God of your father. Know him. And serve him with a whole heart and a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and tests every plan and thought. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you cast him off, he will forsake you forever. Brethren, put God first. Put him first. Now, brethren, let's be real with this. We're busy, right? I have yet to meet an American. When I ask them, how's things going? Great. I have so much free time in my hands, I don't even know what I'm doing with it all. Typically, I ain't seen you in a while. How's it been? Man, we've been so busy between the kids and work and church and that. We've just not even had time to breathe the last few months. Brethren, realization, we're all busy. Every last one of us. And I think in some ways, Satan wants us to be busy with this life so that we forget about the life to come. I do. Brethren, it's very easy amidst the busyness and amidst the struggle and the chaos of the age to forget that there's a time coming when all this busyness won't really matter. It won't matter how many books on your reading list you've read. It won't matter how many sports you've mastered. It won't matter how many Olympic medals you've won. Won't matter how many degrees you have. All that will matter is, did you put God first? This is not a statement for the old. David tells this to his young son. Put God first. Now, amidst of this, you'll note the struggle. When you put God first, it then can almost seem like this life is meaningless. If I may take you into my mind just for a moment. If you ever just stop and contemplate eternity, have you ever just stopped and contemplated eternity? I don't know about you, but I get sick at my stomach. Trying to think of an existence outside of time with no end and no beginning. And then stopping to think about what that spiritual realm will be like, and trying to think what heaven will be, and trying to consider what it will be there. If you think about it enough, this life kind of becomes meaningless, does it not? But brethren, I would recommend whenever you come to know the glories of God and you come to know the bliss of his eternity, it does not make whatever amount of years we have here meaningless. But it gives them all the more purpose. because we know that our life here is to be stewards of God's creation. Our life here is to live a vocation as God's image bearers. Our life here is to be the ones who take God's blessings and shower them out to this earth. That's our purpose. To be stewards of what God has made, to live to His glory, so that then when the day of eternity can come, then He can harvest all of the righteousness that has been sown in this life. Are you sowing righteousness, Isaiah 32? Are you planting peace, James 3? What are you living in this life? So you can't do it all. Put God first. Lesson 3, David continues. Skip down with me toward the end. Through the next section of 1 Chronicles 28, David gives Solomon various practical instructions about the temple, and these are just blueprints and layouts of the temple. Skip down to verse 20. Then David said to Solomon his son, "Be strong and courageous and do it. Do not be afraid and dismayed, for the Lord God, even my God, is with you. He will not leave you or forsake you until all the work for the service of the house of the Lord is finished. And behold, the divisions of the priests and the Levites for all the service of the house of God, and with you all the work will be every willing man who has skill for any kind of service, and also for the officers and for all the people who are wholly under your command." Lesson 3 is this: the world will go on. The world will go on. Brethren, this is a tough pill for me to even consider swallowing. But do you notice what David tells his son? He tells his son much what God told Joshua after Moses' death in Joshua 1. Be strong and courageous and do it. Exact words from Joshua 1. After the death of Moses, Joshua was going to have a choice to make: to live out God's purpose or to give in to the world. After the death of his father, Solomon was going to have the same choice to make: live out the purpose of God or give in to the world. Fortunately, we know where Solomon ended up on that one. But brethren, here's the reality that David tells his son: the world will go on. And brethren, for many of you who are older, and you know that the end is 5, 10, maybe even 20 years away, trying to consider this world without you and trying to consider what your family of all people will do without you is impossible. But if I may give a dose of reality, while the world in some places may slow down for a bit, it's going to keep spinning. The world's going to go on. And you know, as I thought more about this, I realized it took a long time for Moses to learn this lesson. We won't take the time to turn there, but in Exodus 18, Moses has just led God's people through the Red Sea. He's around 80-ish at this point, around 80-ish. And as he gets to Sinai, Moses is trying to do everything. He's trying to spiritually guide the people. He's trying to do the counsel for the people. He's trying to judge for the people. He does everything. When his father-in-law Jethro comes from Midian with his family, he sees the chaos that Moses is running himself through, and he says, "Moses, stop doing it all. Appoint some elders and they'll help you." Moses is a wise young son-in-law, listened to his father-in-law's advice, and does it. Moses was trying to do it all in Exodus 18. But you know, it's interesting, as you go to Numbers chapter 27, Moses is near death. He's around 120 by this point. He's had 40 years to mature. Yes, Moses was immature at 80. But he had 40 years to mature at 120. And whenever God tells him in Numbers 27 that you're about to die, you know what Moses says? "Just pick a shepherd who can guide my people. Pick a shepherd who can guide my people." Moses is ready for his own death. He's ready in one sense to leave Israel, because he knows that God is going to take care of his people. Brethren, are you preparing for your world without you? Are you preparing for your life without you if it happens tomorrow? Are you like Moses in Exodus 18 or like Moses in Numbers 27? I'll be real with you. I'm not even in Exodus 18. I'm about in like Exodus 2. Put God first. But know the world's going to go on. The final lesson that David gives his son. Let's read from 1 Chronicles chapter 29. Skip over with me to 1 Chronicles 29. David is going to go back and talk to the entire assembly. 1 Chronicles 29, beginning in verse 10. This is a bit lengthier of a reading. Listen to God's words through David. Then David blessed the Lord in the presence of all the people, and David said, "Blessed are you, O Lord, the God of Israel, our Father forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heavens and in the earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you rule over all. In your hand are power and might, and in your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. And now we thank you, our God, and praise your glorious name. But who am I, and what is my people, that we should be thus to offer willingly? For all things come from you, and of your own we have given you. For we are strangers before you, and sojourners as all fathers were. Our days on earth are like a shadow, and there is no abiding." If I can stop there for a second. Our days on earth are like a shadow, and there is no abiding. For those of y'all who are familiar with C.S. Lewis, do you know what he means by the Shadowlands? That's where Lewis gets that image from. Verse 16. O Lord our God, all this abundance that we have provided for building you a house for your holy name comes from your hand and is your own. I know, my God, that you test the heart and have pleasure in uprightness. In the uprightness of my heart, I have freely offered all these things. And now I have seen your people who are present here offering freely and joyously to you. O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, our fathers, keep forever such purposes and thoughts in the hearts of your people and direct their hearts towards you. Grant to Solomon, my son, a whole heart, that he may keep your commandments and your testimonies and your statutes, performing all that he may build the palace for which I have made provision. Skip down to verse 28. Then David died at a good age, full of days, riches, and honor. And Solomon, his son, reigned in his place. Could you imagine being among the mourners of David? Could you imagine putting that great king to rest? Do you notice what David did in his last words? The last words recorded in Chronicles are very similar to 1 Kings. David was ready to give his final words. And I'll urge you, go back and reread it. Notice how many times he mentions the heart. David knew exactly what he was going to say as his final goodbye to his people. So, brethren, if I may say lesson four, write your funeral. Write your funeral. Brethren, this is what made me think of this passage in this sermon in general over the last few weeks. This is not a condemnation. Please don't take it as such. But I've noted generally over my work the last 3 years here and other funerals I've done other places, there is only one funeral I have preached where I was asked by that person to preach the funeral. Typically, it's the family mourning and scrambling to find someone. And then we'll put the service together, pick out the songs, pick out the message, try to come up with memories. But Doug Kirk was the only person who called and asked me, "Ryan, will you preach my funeral?" Doug's wife had died. His son had died just a few months before. And after Diane had passed, I had called Doug one day. I can't even remember now what we were talking about. We were still living at the Briscoe house. But I can remember just being outside on the driveway, just walking. I walk a lot as I talk. And as we were talking, Doug said, "Ryan, I have a question for you." I'm like, "Well, sure, what is it?" Thought he wanted to have lunch or something. He said, "Ryan, will you preach my funeral?" I've never been asked this before. I didn't know what to say. I mean, I think I jokingly said, "Well, Doug, are we hoping to have it anytime soon?" And he chuckled and said, no, just when the time comes, I want to make sure it's ready. Brethren, if you're like me, you don't want to think that you're ever going to have a funeral. What's going to be said? Who's going to do it? Finally, 3 weeks ago, Jessica and I talked about who will do our funerals. We've never had this conversation. Do you know what songs will be sung? Bruce has been requested by a few people before. Do you know who's doing it? Do you know what will be said? Do you know what words of comfort are going to be given to your family? Or I'll be in another place and they can figure it out when I'm gone. Grant to Solomon, my son, a whole heart, that he may keep your commandments, your testimonies, and your statutes, performing all that he may build the palace for which I have made provision. Before we close, I would like for you to please turn with me to 1 Kings chapter 2. Turn back to 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings 2 is the parallel account of what we just read in Chronicles. There's a phrase here that I would like to leave you with. Much like my Mighty Men sermon from last week, this was a sermon I had on the back burner for months. I read this phrase 6 months ago, and it just popped on the page. 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 1. When David's time to die drew near, he commanded Solomon his son, saying, "I am about to go the way of all the earth." He doesn't mean he's going to breakfast. I think you know clearly what he means. David is about to go the way of all the earth. From dust we came, to dust we shall return. From God's breath that was granted, to God's spirit to which we shall return, we one day will go the way of all the earth. Will you take heed from David and be ready? If you're using them, get out your songbooks, please. The week after Brooklyn was born, October 2 years ago, Andy had covered for me one Sunday morning. And I remember Andy had preached from Matthew 25. It's a sermon, Andy, of all yours you've preached, this is the one that's really stuck with me. Matthew 25 is the judgment chapter where Jesus is essentially saying, get ready. And I can remember at the time just going through an almost existential crisis. Because after, parents, you know this, after your first child is born, you just can't imagine life being any different. Life is finally perfect. The thing that you didn't even know that would bring something so meaningful to your life that you couldn't even understand is now here. And life is perfect. And I came to services that morning. Jessica and Brooklyn, of course, were home. But I came to services that morning just on cloud nine, knowing that life was now perfect. And Andy, you preached on death. And I sat there the whole sermon thinking, oh no, this will never happen to me. And as Andy went through the sermon, he used the various parables from Matthew 25 to talk about, in light of judgment, in light of death, in light of the end, how do you live? And he used the parable of the talents to explain God expects increase. God expects increase. And that reshaped the whole way that I was viewing parenting and life and marriage and everything in general. Because life was no longer just about being good for 80 years and dying and going to heaven. Life was about increasing God's beautiful creation to His glory in this life. And whether it be in the domain of my marriage, or with Brooklyn, or with the coming twins, or with my work here, or with camp, or with recreation, or with family, or with friends, whatever it may be. My purpose in life is to bear fruit for God, to renew His creation, to give increase to what He's given. Because I have no idea how many years I'll be granted. It may be 28 and a half, it may be 98 and a half, I don't know. But what I do know for certain is, one day God will harvest all of the fruits of this earth. And how many fruits have I borne for Him in this life? Because brethren, one day we will all go the way of all men. Perhaps you're sitting there as uncomfortable as can be and you just can't wait till I'm done so we can sing. It may be the Spirit pricking your heart. If you have any need this very morning, come forward while we stand and sing. Come to Jesus.